Blog Talk Radio.
What?
Hello, guys. Hey. Sorry about that.
Oh, it's all good. We're here.
Okay, who do we have here? We have Alan and Jesse and Seth.
Yeah.
I am so sorry about that. My daughter came over and she just decided that she was going to start working on her FAFSA with me out of the blue, and I'm just like, oh, my God, you got to go. You got to go. I have to start this show.
Okay. I'm good.
Kids. So anyway, we are on the air live right now, and we are here with Seth Breedlove, Alan McGargle, and Jesse Morgan, who produced and directed and shot and filmed the movie The Minerva Monster. I know a lot of people have bought the DVD, and you guys started a Kickstarter project. And how did that go?
Pretty awesome, actually.
What was your goal starting out?
Starting goal was, Alan, what was it, like 500?
Our starting goal was $500. We were trying to just raise enough money to get the DVDs printed, but things just kind of took off. I think within the first 4.5 to 5 hours, we already had our 500, and by the time it was all over, we were at 6,500 or something like that.
Oh,
yeah, plus like private donation. I mean, there were donations that came in through Grassman Gear and stuff too. So it was above and beyond what we expected.
You had to be surprised about that.
I was and I wasn't, because I think Alan and Jesse and I have all said, I think there is a desire for this type of cryptid centric entertainment that takes the subject seriously, doesn't over-dramatize things, and just puts it out there and lets the witness tell their story. That's kind of what we went into this pitching it as, and I think people wanted to see that. So,
yeah, I did. I finally did get to see it because Alan gave me the copy, because when I did the Kickstarter donation as well, and I got a Blu-ray, and I don't have a Blu-ray player, so actually I got to see it, and it was really, I just loved it. It was really, really good. So I want to know a little bit, I don't know very much about Seth Breedlove, so I want to know, is your passion is more of the filmmaking, or do you have a real interest in all things cryptid?
Well, I do a podcast about Bigfoot, so I definitely have an interest in Bigfoot and lake monsters and UFOs and all this stuff too. So filmmaking was something that I cannot say I was super passionate about when we started making this project. It was something that I had loved as a kid, and I had wanted to go to film school when I graduated high school. That was like my goal, was actually to go to the New York Film Academy. And a lot of my friends that I kind of grew up with, they are involved in film in some capacity, and we used to make short films when I was younger and that kind of stuff. But I kind of walked away from it when I graduated high school. And for some reason, I just said the other night, Alan and I talked at the Wadsworth Library, and I said sometimes you have to give up on a dream for it to come true. I guess that's where I was at. I kind of had let go of it, and then this project kind of brought me back around to what I had loved so much as a kid, which is film, and especially documentary filmmaking now.
Yeah. So what made you decide to have the Minerva story be your very first documentary?
Well, it was close. It was like the story that we didn't have to drive 5 states away, you know, to cover, and I had done some of the research on it already before we started, so the groundwork was already laid, and you know, it was one of those things where we had other options. I think I talked with Alan and Jesse about a couple other stories, but this was one of the first ones I mentioned to them, and they I think they thought the subject matter was as fascinating as I did, so we all kind of jumped in on it together.
Wow. How do you, Alan and Jesse, why don't you chip in and tell me? I know you guys have always wanted to make movies ever since you were young lads.
Yeah, this is probably my third or fourth attempt at making a film. Jesse and I have tried a couple other times with some projects that never really got anywhere. At one point, we contributed to a Kickstarter for Squatchin' USA, and we weren't ever quite able to get that off the ground. But we've been wanting to do something like that for quite a while, many years.
Yeah. And you guys are pretty much self-taught, aren't you, with your cinematography and your video work?
Yeah, I would say we pretty much still don't have any clue what we're doing. So, we're self-taught in process still. Jeff is the only one that has any kind of formal training with some photography stuff he did in college. That's really the only official training we have.
Yeah, well, I mean, the very first thing I saw was the trailer you guys did. It was just a couple minutes long, and it was just from that trailer alone made me want to see the movie. I didn't even know what it was about, the documentary. I didn't know what it was about or anything, but it was like that was just so tastefully done, and it was so cool the way it looked. It was like old-fashioned, grainy kind of, small-town look. It was very, very cool.
The trailer was a team effort. The original trailer that I put together was very Hollywood, talked down off the ledge from our group here, and we made a little better trailer. The original is actually kind of hysterical to go back and look at now.
That's funny. So you did your research, and then you decided to go and meet this family and interview this family, right, Seth?
Yeah. Yeah, the process that led up to that was extensive. Alan might actually have a better remembrance of how much time we actually spent doing the prep work to get out there, but it was like a month, because there was a lot of time between when I met Alan and Jesse and when we talked about making a movie and then when we actually set out to make a movie. It was like 2 months, I think.
Yeah, the biggest issue we had was we were all working full-time jobs and just trying to find the time that matched up with the witness, time, and just getting all that arranged, I think, was the biggest issue.
So for our listeners who might not know about the Minerva Monster, because there's people, from out of the state of Ohio, who listen, why don't you give us the background and then lead into what you learned from interviewing the family?
Well, I can start us out here, and then Alan and Jesse could probably fill this in a little better, because I think their knowledge of the story going into it was a little less than mine, just because I had spent all this time on it. So their actual learning about the story is probably, when you're with a story like this for so long, you actually start to forget pieces of the puzzle, which we've seen, especially in the promotional process. I cannot recall certain aspects of the story, and I think it's just from spending the amount of time I have with it. But basically in 1978, the Caton family, who lived outside of Minerva, Ohio, started seeing an unusual creature on the hill behind their house. And it kind of became a media frenzy after the family called the police one night when the creature approached their home. And the police came out, and it hit the Akron Beacon Journal. It was covered by Barbara Galloway. And it became this kind of overnight sensation. It was in Canton Repository and Akron Beacon Journal. And because it was in the Akron Beacon Journal, it ran all across the country. And then news teams came in from Germany and Japan to cover it as well. So then it became kind of a global phenomenon. And then, you had guys like Robert W. Morgan out at the house covering the case, which isn't talked about in the movie, but Robert W. Morgan was there, and Ron Schaffner, who was, I don't think I've mentioned Ron enough, but Ron Schaffner was this Ohio Bigfoot investigator, and he's not involved in the subject anymore, but he's still around, and he was a big help to us during the filming of the movie, especially even in post-production, sending us different stuff. He was with the Catons the day or two days after everything happened, so he actually had some audio interviews and pictures and stuff, and we were able to really get a lot out of Ron. He really helped us out. But just coming to the story and thinking that I knew pretty much the gist of, what happened, and then actually speaking to the Caton family and learning that there's so much more to the story, this was an ongoing event, and it didn't just start in 78, it started years before and possibly decades before. There was so much to learn from just the process.
So do you think that, like maybe you're a little bit skeptical or anything, but do you really feel like after speaking to the Caton family that they sincerely had a Bigfoot on their property?
I don't know what they saw, but I always borrow James Shannon's line, which is that, you know, they saw something unexplainable. So I don't know if a Bigfoot exists, but they definitely did not, in my opinion, see a black bear. They didn't see a guy in a suit. So what it was, I'm not really sure. It was definitely a very unusual incident. There was, you know, multiple eyewitnesses there. There were other eyewitnesses from around Minerva that saw something. And, you know, when you have that much corroborating evidence, it does seem like there was something bipedal and hairy wandering around their house.
Now, did they have anything violent happen to them at this time, or was it just a sighting?
The only violent kind of incident that happened, I mean, outright violent incident that happened, was the Catons owned a German Shepherd dog, and the dog one night, the Catons went to bed, and the dog was just barking furiously at something on the hillside. And middle of the night, the sound stopped, and in the morning, they found the dog dead outside of its leash with its neck snapped. And, you know, it's a very odd incident, obviously. So the thinking is that maybe this thing got in a tussle with the monster, quote-unquote, and the monster may have literally just shattered this thing's neck, I guess, is kind of the thinking.
Wow. Did they collect any physical evidence? Did they find any footprints?
We are not under attack. We are not under attack.
Jesse's.
We
got to
go.
Jesse.
I told him it wasn't me.
There was actually, Alan can probably help me out here. There was supposedly a jawbone found and possible hair sample. Yeah.
Yeah. All of which was kind of discounted. The claim was it got sent to Malone University, and depending on who you talk to, it was either dismissed as we don't know what it is, or lost and never tested. So the evidence that was around then is long gone now. We could find no trace of it.
Wow. You did talk to the sheriff. I saw you interviewed the sheriff at the time. And what was his thoughts about it?
About the evidence, he felt that the jawbone they found was a cow, and that jawbone was lost by Malone. What he thought about the case was that he believes the Caton family didn't lie, and that, you know, like I said, there's something unexplainable took place there. He's kind of like me, you know, we're both a little on the skeptical side, but the family, to me, just from my, you know, encounters with them, doesn't seem to be a family full of liars or anything, and they all kind of corroborate the other story. I mean, the thing that stands out to me is during the filming of the movie, we did this interview with Howie, and Howie told this story about how, spoilers if you haven't seen the movie, but he told this story about how an old neighbor lady was standing with them, you know, out and back, and she didn't believe the stories about this thing throwing rocks. And she said, you know, if you're so, what was it, Alan? If you're so smart, why don't you
beat me in the head with it, yeah.
Right in between the eyes.
Yeah. Why don't you beam me in the eyes with a rock or something? And all of a sudden, a rock came out of the woods and beamed her in the eyes, you know. And he tells me that story, and I thought, well, that just sounds totally unbelievable. I mean, to me, that sounds unbelievable. I don't know why, but more unbelievable than anything in the movie. And I remember at the time that he told the story thinking that didn't seem plausible. And then later, Alan and I actually went out to the Caton's house to show the family the movie after we had finished, you know, editing it and everything. And
I got beamed in between the eyes. No.
Sure enough, Alan got beamed right in the eyes. No,
it was me. I followed.
I guess as that part was kind of playing on TV in the movie, his wife kind of smirked, and it turns out she was, like, with him when that incident took place. So she backs up that story. So that was what, I mean, that really surprised me, because that, if anything seems exaggerated in that movie, in his particular witness testimony, to me, that's it. I mean, I know that sounds absurd given all the stuff that happened, but to me, that's the most outlandish thing in his testimony, and his wife, you know, was apparently there for it.
Wow, that is funny. But it does happen. That happened to me in Pennsylvania. I was going out with Eric Altman and his group, and I had gotten there late at night, and I had gone up, and Dwayne was wearing a hard hat. And I said to Dwayne, why are you wearing a hard hat? And he said, well, this thing was throwing rocks at us last weekend, and I don't want to get hit in the head. And I said, well, I want to get hit with a rock. And we were standing there, and me and Dwayne were probably about 4 feet apart. And next thing you know, a rock came whizzing between us, like horizontally. It wasn't, you know, dropping from the tree. It wasn't an acorn. And it hit the, there was like a tensile fence there. Hit the fence. We heard it go ting, you know, we're just like, oh my God. And Alan and, I mean, not Alan, Eric and the other guy, Dave, were down. We saw them 100 yards away down by the cars, and there was only the four of us. So it was just like, wow, that was really cool. So I do have a little bit of a belief in that part of it. I don't know why. Maybe they could. They don't speak English. Maybe they read our thoughts or whatever. But if they exist, let me do my air quotes here, if they exist. But very interesting. Now, is the Minerva Monster sighting the only sighting in the, or should I say most notorious for having the most eyewitnesses at one time?
You mean like historically?
Yes.
I'm sure there's something. You know what? That's not a bad question, though. I haven't been asked that question. I have no idea.
It's not
idea.
A bad question. We just don't have a good answer.
Yeah, it's a really good question. Because, like, I almost would wonder that as well. Like, if you have, I mean, on the police report, we have seven people. And I think there are children there, too. And they're not listed on the police report. So there probably was more. But that is actually a really good question, just because I wonder where it would rank in terms of, you know, like most. I mean, because I know the Whitehall case, you have like seven people at one time and stuff, but this is seven as well. So that's an interesting correlation.
Well, now that I think about it, the goat man down on that Honey Island in Texas, he supposedly was standing up on this cliff and threw a tire down where people were having a picnic. There was like lots of people there. That might be one of the more historically notable ones for having multiple witnesses. But that is fascinating.
Yeah,
the
goat man case was definitely Jesse, though.
No, I deny. I was in Chicago.
At a speaking.
So the seven witnesses, was that all family?
Yeah, it's primarily family. There was a kid there named Scott Patterson who was friends with Howie Caton, and he actually went on to become a member of law enforcement. And I would have loved to have gotten him in the movie, but he's like one of those guys who he doesn't really want anything to do with the story anymore. But at the time, he was a member of law enforcement, and in the movie, they talk a little bit about how he drew a gun. So it was him and there's actually two different stories there about that kitchen incident. One is that Scott Patterson drew a gun and pointed it at the creature, and the other is that Scott Patterson hid under a table along with the children. So I'm not sure which we should believe.
Oh, boy. I guess he doesn't want the latter one to be his notorious
right.
moment, hiding under the table with the kids. So the
right.
city of Minerva, the town, I should say, they really turned out for this event. When you had the premiere there, I mean, the bakeries were making cakes and everything with your design, your cover design on the DVD.
Mm-hmm.
How was that? How did you feel at that moment?
I you know what? That day was so crazy. For me, it was just running back and forth and making sure everything was coordinated. At the end of the day, I was able to I think it really hit me was actually I bought one of those cakes. I actually bought like a huge sheet cake because we had a dinner after the screening. So I actually, when I went into the bakery and saw all the cakes, and then found out that they had been selling out every day that week, like they had actually sold out of all their Minerva Monster cakes 3 days in a row. I think that was when it kind of hit me, like something I was involved in and something that we were, you know, the three of us helped make was literally the focal point of this celebration in this tiny little town. It was, I mean, it's astonishing to, I think it's astonishing to all of us, but it's especially astonishing to me just how everything ended up turning out and how the town supported it and wanted us to be involved. And, I mean, it was a once-in-a-lifetime kind of experience for me.
Yeah, I was really we were really humbled by the support we got from the town, and the Minerva Monster Day was probably one of the best days we've ever had. It was just incredible to be not just a part of it, but be kind of like at the epicenter of it all. You know, it was really cool.
Yeah, when you guys were doing the filming, did the town like open their doors to you and welcome you with open arms and let you have access to whatever you wanted?
The town itself. I don't even know that the town itself really knew we existed at that point. We were there during a really busy weekend. Like when we were actually shooting the stuff, the footage B-roll downtown, it was the weekend of their Oktoberfest and this classic hot rod car show. And I don't know that they even realized we were there. But the Historical Society from day one was extremely welcoming and, you know, threw the doors open for us, literally let us shoot interviews, let us, you know, they came down early the one day to open the doors for us and help us get up the lighting and everything. They've opened the Historical Society on days when it was closed so I could get access to photos and all kinds of stuff. So, and I mean, in the end, obviously, the town was extremely welcoming. I just think early on it was probably, we were so small, we just snuck under the radar.
Yeah. Was the mayor aware that you guys were in town doing this?
The mayor became aware because, was it you that went and got him?
I think so. I'm not exactly sure. All that's kind of a blur. But we had tried to get in contact with him through the phone. I think one of us, Alan or you, had been trying to call and just never connected. We showed up to do some interviews that day. And, you know, it's actually quite amazing. It's literally small town America. It's not a town. It's actually a village with, you know, a beautiful main street with a brick road and everything. But the front door to the mayor's office and all their city public offices on a Saturday is just wide open. You just walk in, you walk into the mayor's office. It's amazing. But he wasn't in his office. And I don't remember, somehow somebody said, I'll let him know you're here or something. Because I remember he showed up on the street behind us and, like, tapped us on the back and said, hey, are you the guys making the movie?
Yeah, we were actually filming, like, B-roll of the city hall. And he came out to see what we were doing. He was like, you know, all competitive. Are you guys got something? He was like, what do you mean? He's like, I'm the mayor. I was like, whoa. We're like, hey, do you want to go on camera? He's like, okay.
Yeah, he literally was like, yeah, it sounds great. Give me 20 minutes. I'll be right down to the Historical Society. So it was amazing, stunning at the same time that he's just like, yeah, give me 20 minutes. You know, it was very, very cool.
So he was aware of the story. I'm sure that's probably, was that the biggest thing that's ever happened in Minerva?
No, he was aware of it, but it wasn't, it's just not, in Minerva, it's just not something that people, I mean, I think they do now, but it wasn't something that people really rallied around or remember even. I mean, there's a ton of people, especially younger people, that didn't even know the story existed. And the older people are like, oh, yeah, that one time, you know, those people saw that thing. It just wasn't something that was really a major part of the public consciousness. And I think we changed that, honestly. I really think, and I'm not trying to, like, it's not an ego-driven thing, but I think Minerva Monster, the movie, helped kind of spur this remembrance of history there that I think is fantastic. We were told that the weekend of Minerva Monster Day, or the day of Minerva Monster Day, the Historical Society set up a table outside, and they had six new volunteers to join the Historical Society, which for that Historical Society, it's primarily run by retirees who are getting up there in years, and they need help.
Yeah.
And so just to hear that from me was really exciting for us, because we wanted to help them, you know, because they were so kind to us. We wanted to do something for them. So I was really excited when I was told that.
Well, that's awesome. That really is, because to get six volunteers in one day is probably like more than they've gotten in 6 years.
I think that's probably true.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. You brought awareness to the Historical Society. That's awesome. So when you were doing the filming, once people caught on, and maybe even after you did the premiere, did anyone else ever come up to you and say they had a sighting?
Yeah, we had sightings. You mean after the premiere did we have them come up to us?
Right, because people knew about it and then they wanted to tell their story.
I had a lady come up to me during Minerva Monster Day to say she had had a sighting, but it was over by the Jackson Bog, so that isn't really in the same vicinity. We had a lot of people come forward after the word of the movie had kind of started to seep out, but it was well before the premiere. Alan and Jesse might have talked to someone, though.
Yeah, we actually, I think all of us had at least one or two people come up to and say, you know, I live 2 miles outside of town, and I this last week I had something. So there's still active sightings out there from people, which was interesting.
Yeah, it may have actually been the same woman that Seth was talking about. I had a woman, I was outside with the vendor table for most of the day, and it was a great view on seeing everybody on the street. But several people came up and wanted to talk about, you know, things that they believe they saw in the area. But the one woman actually came up and she actually unfolded like one of those old school like red road maps that are about 8 feet wide by 6 feet wide. And she unfolds it and it's all worn and torn. And, you know, she lays it over the vendor table. She's, you know, just wanting to share the story about something she saw, though. So I think it's very cool to see people kind of almost feel like, oh, I can finally share this with somebody that'll actually, you know, take a couple minutes to listen to me. So that was, it's kind of like an ancillary benefit, but it's cool.
Yeah, we do a lot of these, not a lot, but we've done several of these like street fairs and conferences and stuff with our Grassman Gear brand, where we set up a vendor table and sell merchandise and stuff. And we find that most of the time we end up talking to people about their Bigfoot sightings. It's one of the cool little kind of benefits of just being on the street and having a Bigfoot attached to your name.
Yeah, there was one person that did tell me their story, which was the Dave that runs the Minerva Music Center. He handled a lot of the sound for us on Minerva Monster Day, and he actually told me about a couple that own a vineyard right outside of Minerva that had I guess they were sitting on their back porch one night, and they heard all this splashing around down by this pond. I guess they own a lot of property, and there's this, I guess, gorgeous, you know, view looking from their back porch down to this pond, and then a really dense kind of Minerva woods beyond it. And they heard this splashing around, and all of a sudden this creature just stands up and walks away from them into the woods. And I guess it was, you know, right around dusk, so they had pretty good view of this thing, and they watched it for almost a minute walk into the tree line and disappear.
Wow. So are any of those stories that Alan and Jesse, you guys want to follow up on and go back to that area and do a little research?
Well, any time that they take that person takes the time, especially to share details and stuff, it gets you, Sharon, it gets you all excited and everything, and you practically want to jump in the squashmobile and roll out on the road right then. But I think that we've got some things in the works that we're putting together, and that's going to be taking up a lot of our time for the foreseeable future.
Yes. Well, let me take a moment here, and Seth, let everybody know where they can get their copy of The Minerva Monster.
You can buy it, obviously, at grassmangear.com. If you pre-ordered, that's where you most people got it, at grassmangear.com. You can stream it at vimeo.com/on-demand/Minerva Monster, and there is a Small Town Monsters website, which is smalltownmonsters.com, and the shop there is
shop.smalltownmonsters.com. Okay, very good. So you guys have something going on in the future, I hear.
Which thing
what's
are we talking
about? What's your next project, Seth?
Alan, are we saying that on air yet?
Is this
top secret?
That's up to you.
All right, I'm
really
gonna
go
ahead and pop
with it.
All right, let's just talk. Yeah, we're doing the next film is Whitehall. Tentative title being I won't even go into the title yet, but we're heading to Whitehall in about a week, and we're going to shoot a movie while we're there. The main reason we were heading there was to do this library presentation that Alan and his family set up for us. We're doing a screening in Wells, New York, and it just so happened that it's only about, Alan, you said like an hour and a half from Whitehall?
It's about an hour and a half from Wells to Whitehall, yeah.
Yeah, and Alan and Jesse have had some experience in and around Whitehall, and Whitehall was on my list of it's like it kind of is the Willow Creek of the East Coast. I mean, it's like this, they call it the Bigfoot hub of the East Coast. So I kind of wanted to go there and do something as much on the culture of, kind of that follows Bigfoot there as anything. But as I was researching the story, it turns out that, there's this fantastic incident that occurred back in 1976. And, I started talking to some of the people in the area. And anyway, we are making a Whitehall movie. It's going to be awesome. I think we're all extremely excited about this one. And, I'll just say it's not going to end at Whitehall. We've got an extremely, extremely busy summer coming up, and there's things we hope to do. Basically, by this time next year, I want to have three finished Small Town Monsters movies, including, Minerva Monster, so it would be Minerva Monster and two others. By this time next year, that's my goal, is to have two more done. So, and I think, given the team and the effort that everyone puts in, I think it's totally doable. I mean, we work our butts off, and it's how we manage to do what we do.
I know. You're running Jesse and Alan ragged.
I try. That's my goal.
We were ragged coming into this, so.
So, Jesse, I mean, Alan and Jesse, you can just tell me about your experience at Whitehall.
Well, Alan, why don't you start, because you kind of do a better job of getting this going.
Well, my parents live in upstate New York, like I said, about an hour and a half from the Whitehall area. Me and Jesse started this whole Bigfoot thing because I was going up to visit my parents, and I decided to bring Jesse along, and I was looking for something fun for us to do, so I wanted to do this kind of advanced kind of hike. So I started looking up, and I found a BFRO site, and I found a bunch of sightings in the area. And it's actually where we went is near Whitehall, but it's actually on the other side of Lake George. So it's probably about 20, 25 minutes from Whitehall. That's kind of where Bigfoot started. We had some stuff happen on the mountain that day that kind of got us hooked. And that's how we found the Ohio folks. And then what was it last year? We went to Whitehall and kind of poked around a little bit.
Yeah, little did we know that that was a scouting that would turn into a recon mission of Whitehall a little bit. But, so basically, Alan comes up, and we have this running joke between us where if he comes up to me and he goes, "Dude, I got this great idea." Well, I've learned I should temper that a little bit, because he's like, "Well, there's this mountain, and we can go hike it." I'm like, "Okay." And so we look, and it says advanced hike. What's advanced hike? Who knows? We'll be fine. So we venture out on this day, and it's about 85, 90 degrees. Beautiful sky, blue, sunny, high humidity, though. And we start heading up a 3-mile hike up?
Yeah, 3 miles to the peak.
To the peak. And we're venturing up, and we're stopping, burning through all our water.
Well, our plan was there's like a lean-to up at the very top. We were going to hike up there and then stay the night up there if we could. Yeah, that was the plan.
That was the plan. And, it was the plan. So on our way up, we're hiking up this trail, and we hear this loud cracking, breaking noise up up the trail up above us. You know, and we're like, what was that? I'm like, I don't know. Let's just keep moving so we don't pass out right here. So we kept going, and as we're getting up the trail, we start to be able to smell something. And it's one of those things where it takes you a minute to for it to, your brain to register what it is, and I realized it was the fresh green smell of a tree. And when we went up another, I don't know, 50, 100 feet, you could see there was probably a tree 4 to 5 inches across that had been twisted and broken over the right over the trail, actually. And it was a perfectly healthy, live green tree. And unfortunately, being noobs in the Bigfoot world, we didn't do anything to document that other than say, "Wow, that's crazy," and kept going up the trail. And you know, we kind of both agreed and that later on, we both kind of felt like we might have been being watched. There's like a ridge line above you to the left when you're walking up this trail, but nothing definitive. But that situation in itself was enough to, you know, drive us to where we are today.
Yeah, I mean, there was no wind that day, and, you know, the tree wasn't big enough that I think a black bear would try to climb it, because there are black bear up there. It was just weird the way it was and the way that it literally, we had to hike way off trail just to get around this. It was like it was preventing us from going up the trail. It was just a strange moment that we look back on and kind of wish we had that to do over again.
Yeah. But that's
so that was like your first experience? That was the first time that you thought you might be interested in looking for Bigfoot?
That was the first time we actually went out in the woods with the intent of looking for Bigfoot. We had the wrong kind of backpacks. I had some limited camera gear, and I'm like carrying a tent in one hand. We had no tape measures. Complete disaster. I never once even brought the video camera out, so there's no footage of anything. So it was a complete disaster, but it left us with that thirst for more adventure, and it kind of drove us to improve our methods, and kind of where we're at today is because of that failed adventure.
Yeah.
And we want to go back there someday and conquer that mountain.
Yeah,
are you going to take
steps
there?
I don't know that we're going to have time.
Take me there and leave me.
Yeah,
it's a possibility.
It's a possibility.
We're actually down 0-2, Alan and I, to the mountain. It's up 2-0 in the series. But
we tried again last year, better prepared, and we got about halfway up, and it just thunder and lightning and just started pouring down rain, and
yeah,
it just got really treacherous, so we decided to turn back and hightail it back to the car.
Yeah, it was like, oh, you're better prepared? Thunderstorm! but you gotta understand, this is a, when we say trail, there are parts of it that are very much like a trail you'd find in any park or anything like that.
Yeah.
But there are also parts of this quote-unquote trail that are literally, you have to climb up rocks to get up to the next section.
If you're on your hands and knees, like, climbing up, it's so steep in spots.
I mean,
we probably hiked that in, what, 4 to 6 hours that day?
Mm-hmm.
And we finally got up to a spot where there was a sign, and I was like, this must be the lean-to, and it said 1 mile to go to lean-to. And we were like,
yeah,
oh, my God, we're not going to make it. We're out of water. It's like, it's starting to get dark.
Oh, man. Well, it sounds like you guys have a lot of interesting things coming up, and I'm always your biggest fan, so I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. And Seth, tell me a little bit about your podcast. I'm sorry, I don't listen to other people's podcasts. I get podcast envy, so.
Totally understandable. I don't really listen to many Bigfoot podcasts. There's a few I can tolerate, but I haven't listened to many myself. So it's just me and my friend Mark Matthey, and we just kind of blab about, you know, whatever subject takes our fancy on any particular week. So I don't think it's necessarily for everyone. I think it's as much a show for, like, newbies, like people that are just coming to the subject, as it is, you know, you're like seasoned Bigfooters. We don't get too into just discussing, like, various sighting reports and stuff like that. It's more all sides of the field, and we're both pretty skeptical when it comes to certain things, but we also mix in, you know, interviews. We just did an interview with Linda Godfrey last week, And we've interviewed Ryan Brown and Daryl Collier from the NAWC a couple times. We've interviewed Lyle Blackburn and Eduardo Sanchez and a bunch of those people. So we try to vary it and interview people whenever, you know, there's someone out there that we want to talk to. So
Right. I hear
you.
It gets hard sometimes.
When we first met Seth, he came out to Cuyahoga Valley National Park with me and Jesse. It was the first time we'd actually kind of spend any time together. And he made a podcast out of the audio he recorded that day of hiking. And I always thought that was and Jesse one of the best representations of what we do. It was cool to be a part of that.
No, that was actually really
cool.
That had to
be hilarious.
It was great. And I think I got I know I need to give Seth credit for that. Here's two guys that he just randomly, met, and hey, we're gonna go out in the woods, just us three. So it's why don't you come along? So, but the fact that he even was like, yeah, let's do this.
He was wearing a Med Alert bracelet, so he could call for help.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but, chastity belt.
Chastity belt. that thing would not come off.
That day was an absolute blast too, because it was like there was just random nonsense that happened. Like at one point, I was convinced I had heard something large bipedally walking, and I was like, we found a Bigfoot. So I went bulldozing up the side of like a friggin' mountain. I mean, it was this huge freaking hill, and I just sprint up this hill, and at the top is Jesse. So I thought I had stumbled across Bigfoot, and it was Jesse. And unfortunately, I was hoping Alan. Did you tape any of that? Did you get any of that on camera?
No, because I just heard a noise, and then I saw a flash, and there you went. And I just was staring at you, like, what in the heck is going on? It wasn't until you came back that I actually had the camera rolling again.
I thought I solved the mystery.
I thought you were scared and running back to the car. I didn't know.
That was it, too.
So, Seth, what is the link to your podcast?
Oh, it's just sasswhat.podbean.com or sasswhat.com, which I need to update at some point. But, movie, I mean, honestly, I mean, Mark could tell you, I used to spend a lot more time on the editing of Sasswhat than I have been lately. I love to edit in, audio clips and stuff like that, and I try to find audio clips that pertain to whatever our subject matter is. But I've been so busy lately with, the movie, and it's the same story with Alan and Jesse. Like, we're just so wrapped up in movie stuff that some things have – you can't put as much time into. So Sasswhat is still going, and I plan on doing more with it. Actually, this summer, we even want to get kind of a video version of it going at some point. But here lately, I feel like I've been neglecting it. So at some point, I got to really, focus in on Sasswhat again. But I don't know that that's going to happen right away, given we have so many events coming up, too, with Minerva Monster between now and the end of September that it's insane.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because you've been looking for small venues, small theaters to show the Minerva Monster. How many have you lined up so far?
Well, tomorrow we're showing it at the Canton Palace Theater in Canton, Ohio, which is an amazing 1,500-seat venue. It's this classic old movie house. It's one of the only remaining movie houses of this style in the country. So you'll be seeing a piece of history in a piece of history. So that's pretty awesome. That's at 7:00 in Canton. We've got, let me think, I'm trying to look at all the stuff we've got coming up. We've got, I'm still trying to find, Alan, help me out here. We've got the next thing is the Canton, the Nightlight Cinema in Akron, and that's on July 20th. We're showing the movie. We have a screening of the movie at the Carrollton Library on July 31st. And then when you get into August, we have Minerva Monster at the Creston Public Library, which is just a presentation by us. And then on the 18th, August 18th at 7:00, we're screening the movie at the Lyons Lincoln Theater in Massillon. And there's like two more screenings scheduled. I'm working every day at getting stuff scheduled. I actually just talked to a guy yesterday that owns drive-in theaters, and he's interested about doing something with a movie. So,
oh, that'd be
no
cool.
Promises, but yeah, showing the movie at a drive-in would be awesome.
Oh yeah, that would be. Well, do you even have a full-time job, or is this your full-time job now?
I do. I have a job. It's not full-time. I'm doing the movie making, and then I have a business I'm starting up called Small Town Media, which is like videography and social media marketing and kind of, you know, marketing in various formats.
Is your background in marketing?
No, my background is in about everything you can think of. I've repossessed homes, I've tiled floors, I've driven for FedEx, I've done landscaping, and I've done freelance journalism for about 8 years now as well, and I do medical billing, so I kind of do a little of everything.
Wow, but your passion is making the movies and cryptids.
Yeah, I think my passion is storytelling, first and foremost. Like, anything that is a good story, I want to tell, and I love to be a part of documenting some of these, you know, really fascinating stories.
Yeah, and I know your family supports you, like, 1,000%.
Oh, my mom and dad show up for, like, every event we do, no matter where it is. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if they showed up in New York. But like, they just come out for almost everything. So yeah, and then, you know, I have brothers and sisters, and they share everything on Facebook, and it's just this support network that's insane.
That's awesome. So is there anything about the Minerva Monster that happened behind the scenes that we didn't get to see on the DVD? Anything exciting?
Alan?
Well, there. Yeah, the one
bloopers.
That comes to mind, that
Jesse.
I think, what was that?
I want to see, like, Jesse tripping over the mayor or something like that.
Tripping up. No, we don't have that. There is a scene where Jesse and one of our producers, Nathan, were doing this impromptu rap about Bigfoot that actually made it in the behind the scenes, I think, and. There's actually one of the witnesses that claimed to see what he called the hairy witch when he was a little kid. He kept referring to there were two smaller ones that were with it. He kept referring it to as the hairy witch and the two hairy balls. So the whole interview, he kept talking about the hairy balls, and we ended up cutting all that out of the movie, but it wasn't easy doing that because he must have said it 20 times during the interview, and we're just looking at each other like...
Alan sent me, I got a text the night after we shot that, or maybe it was that night, and Alan said, the movie is uploading in the other room, and all I hear is hairy balls, hairy balls, hairy balls.
Yeah, that's the good stuff, that's the good stuff. So if anybody wants their own copy of the Minerva Monster, they can order it through GraphmanGear.com or SmallTownMonsters.com. And I'm sure if you type in on Amazon, the Minerva Monster, it'll pop up for you right there. And thank you, Seth, for joining us and helping to promote your movie. Oh, what's going on? Is someone driving? Hello?
Sharon, do we still have you?
Yeah, I'm still here. What the heck was that?
I don't know.
It sounds like a tsunami.
Oh, my gosh. I know it's not raining up
here in
Madison.
I think this phone call is being tapped.
I think so.
I think our phone line might be tapped.
The men in black are listening in, right?
Yeah, there's a van outside right now. We got to wrap this up.
I'm actually in the van.
Oh, you're in the van.
Are you handcuffed?
Yeah. Yeah, no worries. I'm just handcuffed in the van outside your house.
Oh, okay.
We'll send Jesse to go save you. Again.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, anyway, thank you so much for talking about the Minerva Monster. And now that I've got Jesse and Alan on the line here, I want to wrap up with our Bigfoot Adventure Weekends that we just did 2 weeks ago. I think I'm finally able to talk about it. I was traumatized, you know, for 2 weeks. I'm finally getting my legs back and everything.
Well, Sharon,
this year,
I've never seen anybody work as hard as you did. You were slopping in the mud and just, I don't know how you made everything held together, but you were certainly the glue that weekend.
I know. You sent that nice little thought on Facebook, and I was like, where'd that come from? You know, it's like, we've done it. This is our fourth year doing it, and it seems like it gets easier every year, but then, like, this year, Mother Nature decided to throw her curveball, and we had monsoons, torrential rainfalls. We were in 8 inches of mud the whole time, but everyone still had a good time. And they
happened to be the year that we had like the most people ever too. So we're trying to manage all these people in the rain, in the mud. It was stressful. It was for us. I think it was all stressful.
It was stressful, but the funny thing is that no one complained. It was just like, you know, it wasn't our fault. It was like Mother Nature threw her curveball, but everyone still had a great time, and we have all these people saying, well, next year when I come back, and it's just like, oh, who said we're going to do another one next year?
Oh, we have
after
to now.
This year. I know, it's kind of like, oh, my gosh. I was just like, I literally needed a week to decompress because I was just physically
oh, yeah,
and mentally
absolutely.
Exhausted.
And just for all you people out there, we've already been looking at dates for next year, so there will be a next year.
There will be. We have to because we gave away a free weekend to somebody.
Oh, yes. We at least have to do it for one.
Yeah, right, for one person. There you go. But anyway, so I had to stay back at the camp with some of the kids who were afraid to go out on the night hike after seeing the movie. We showed the movie Exist, my friend Eduardo's movie, and so I had to stay back at the camp. I still had a good time. You know, we sat by the fire, made s'mores and everything. But I want to hear, it was hard with the rain and everything, but did the people have a good time out on the night hikes? I mean, we used William Jan Guinness gave us his very nice FLIR, and you guys have accumulated so much equipment over the years. Did the guests all have a good time out on the trails?
Well, what was really cool was a lot of the guests this year actually had some night vision stuff. So between us and what some people brought, we probably had, I don't know, 7 or 8 different night visions, which was really cool.
Oh, wow.
The rain kept us off the trail. So most of the hiking we did was kind of on the dirt roads in the wildlife area and so forth. So that was, for me, disappointing because I knew what it was like to be deep in the woods at night. But the people that, you know, were new this year didn't really seem to care. And from what I could tell, everyone had a really good time.
Good. Jesse?
The funny thing is, on the Saturday night, the kind of like the main night ups, I had like the I was leading the group of manly men, all the,
okay.
the bigger guys and the outdoorsmen, the police officer, they were all in my group. And one of them said to me as we're hiking up the trail with just our little barely visible red headlamps, you know, one of the guys like, "Hey, Al, I'm thinking about that movie right now." I was like, "Yeah, me too. Keep going, man. Keep going." That movie was intense.
It was. But, you know, that's what we do. That's how we roll. We give everybody an intense experience. And we, you know, the Friday night movie is usually pretty good, you know, pretty scary and gets everybody amped up to, you know, have their senses heightened to go out into the woods for the night hike.
Yep. To go hike out in the woods and get ripped in half.
Yeah, we want it to happen. Yeah,
no,
but
it's
every year,
and I think there are aspects of, you know, for us of planning it and putting together that, you know, do become a little bit easier just from repetition. But there's definitely always that level of stress of trying to make sure that we can, you know, give people the experience we want to give them. And I know on Saturday night, the night hike, you know, the rain had dampened it a little bit. We weren't going to get deep into the woods, but learning something new every year, I found out a totally new term that I would have never thought I'd ever learn, and that is called frog gigging. Apparently, there were all these trucks everywhere, all around the areas we were trying to look, and basically launch our research from, our night hikes from. And there's these trucks everywhere, and it's like, what are you guys doing? Oh, we're frog gigging. They go out and they get their flashlights and they go try and get frogs. There was apparently a huge competition that night on Saturday. So I learned something
frog
new.
Gigging.
And, you know, and,
yeah,
you know, we still tried to make the best of it. And like Alan said, it's awesome when we have all this cool equipment, the thermals and the night vision and all that stuff, because when you hand that to someone who's never seen it before, it's the same reaction I remember I had when someone handed me, and actually that was Mark Mazel did that. When Alan and I, first time we ever met Mark Mazel, who is leads and plans and executes all our night hikes for BAW, not knowing me from Adam, said, "Yeah, here's my thermal here, check it out." Just handed it to me. One of the coolest things ever, and it really has kind of transferred itself into Bigfoot Adventure Weekends, because that's, you know, we give that now to other people. You know, you hand a thermal to whether it's a kid or an adult that's never used one, and it's just it's such a cool experience to be able to watch them use it for the first time.
Some of the people that brought their own, this was the first time they actually used it to look for Bigfoot. So even they were excited to use their own equipment, which I thought was pretty cool. Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah. With all the trucks buzzing around, all you could hear on our radio Saturday night was, "Alan, there's a diesel truck coming your way. I'll get off the road." It was just like constantly happening. It was a disaster, but you know, we made it work. We made it work.
Yeah. All in all, it was a great weekend despite the monsoons and everything.
Absolutely.
And of course, the sun came out on Sunday when we're trying to pack up everything.
So
next year, BigfootAdventureWeekends.com. Look it up on the internet. It pops up on Google. If you just put in Bigfoot Adventure, you can sign up, register. We'll have our dates for next year looking like early June, probably the first or second week in June. We have so many people coming back, so registration is going to go fast. And people think that they know what we do out there, and they try to imitate it, but they don't even come close. No, it's worth every dime.
Yeah, it is. The group of people that come and volunteer their time to help us and us, you know, we really try to do everything we can to give people what they want and have a good time, and it's not full of, you know, necessarily serious, you know, be quiet and listen for Bigfoot. You know, it's whatever you want. If you want that, we can take a group of people out. Or if you want to just have fun and make Bigfoot calls into the woods, we can have a group of people to go do that too. We really try to cater towards the individual. That's why we limit attendance to, you know, 25 people or so.
Yeah. Speaking on that, I just want to make sure we mentioned Mark Mason. Want to send a shout out to Mark DeWorth as well. Anybody listening, if you don't know, he heads the Ohio Bigfoot Organization, which puts together the Ohio Bigfoot Conference.
Which we are a part of, the OBO, and he just does a tremendous job helping and being a part of BAW.
Yeah, absolutely. Him, Mark Mazel, and also from the Ohio State Park System, Cindy Koss. She's a naturalist with the park system, and Alan and I have got to know her very well over the past year or so, and she absolutely, literally was like, "What can I do to help? Whatever," and really stepped up and did a couple really cool programs, because Bigfoot Adventure Weekends is more about just than Bigfoot. You know, we want to also share information about what we know is really out there for sure. So
yeah.
Good shout out to them.
Yeah, and David Wickham and B. Mills. David Wickham from the BFRO, as well as Mark Mazel from the BFRO, B. Mills, BFRO, and they always help out every year, and it gets better and better every year. I love these people so much. Alan and Jesse, love you guys. You're my brothers. All right, I guess
stop.
We better wrap this
up.
Stop. Seth, thank you for listening to us rant for the last 10 minutes. So.
No, I loved it.
You want to come next year, don't you?
I mean, I love rain, and I love Jesse terrorizing me at night. So, yeah.
You're in.
That was
you're
a special
in.
Moment.
All right, everybody. Minerva Monster, you can buy it at grassmangear.com or smalltownmonsters.com. Type it in on Amazon.com, and you got yourself a copy of the Minerva Monster made by my friends, Seth, Alan, and Jesse. And don't forget Bigfoot Adventure Weekends 2016, Bigfoot Adventure Weekends with an S.com. All right, guys, thank you so much. I'm sorry I was late. Blame my daughter and her FAFSA application. All right, we'll see you guys in the woods. Have a good night.
All right.
All right, take care. To the woods!
Bye. To the woods!